This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 83, 50 Years of BASIC. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful, what day is today? Today is May. It's May. It's May, the lusty month of May. The second in Durham, North Carolina, where it is a cool and breezy 70 degrees or so. I haven't checked in a while because I've been working, I tell you. And we're here for another fun and exciting show with my co-host, Michael Martin.
Hi, Michael, and I'm glad to be back in at home in Budapest. It was a whirlwind set of travels around the world. I'm looking out my window now. It is green. We are having the puffs from the summer trees floating in the wind, and sometimes it makes it look like snow here.
That makes you the puff daddy.
Maybe. It's like, imagine dandelion fluff on steroids.
Ooh.
That just floats around everywhere. And it's that time of year here, so we've got a lot of that going on.
Yeah. I'm like on so many drugs right now because the allergies are just killing me right now.
I have heard that the cars are yellow with like an inch of pollen on them these days. So you must be suffering.
Yep. But
suffering succotash.
Hopefully our listeners are not suffering and they're ready for an exciting shoe.
Yeah, well, we're going to keep them from suffering because in my travels, I've learned some things. I've experienced some things, and travel broadens the horizons, as they say. So one of the things that I was introduced by some colleagues of mine in China was a social app called WeChat. And that's not something you play from Nintendo, in case you were wondering.
And it's not a very small chat program?
Well, it is, I guess. I mean, it's not a big program.
It's a wee chat.
WeChat. So it's WeChat. So you can find out about this on WeChat.com. And it was something I had not really heard much about before, but it is the shiznit, as they may say, in AP, and certainly in Singapore and in China, where I was, Hong Kong as well. And it has some very interesting features to it that are kind of a way of combining some of the things that we have seen and experienced before with Foursquare and other geolocation-based kinds of applications, certainly chat applications like you would have from iMessage or Skype or, you know, any other, chat-type program, and some interesting new little twists to it that I learned a little bit about too. So here's the basic premise. Chat programs are designed to connect people, right? And you do that without having to pay for SMS. So you can do this WeChat program, whether you have a Windows or iOS device or Android, you can communicate across them using just data as opposed to doing SMS. So, point number one, don't have to pay SMS fees. Okay, cool. So, and it's nice that it goes across platform. Second is that you can use WeChat to create groups and to chat easily within groups. All right. So other messages do that too. However, here it seems that you're able to do more of a persistent group. So you might have a group of, people you go out to lunch with on a regular basis, or maybe, you are all sports fans of one particular sport or another. And you're able then to very easily communicate with that group and all the members of that group as part of that joint chat, which seemed rather interesting too.
That's cool.
Now, a variation on it was that if you went to a restaurant, I noticed this in one of the restaurants that I was in, there was a little WeChat logo with a QR code. So you could snap the QR code and then join the group that is affiliated with that restaurant or store or whatever. And then that provides an opportunity for marketing messages to come back and forth with you and to interact not only with a brand like you might with Bojangles or something like that on Twitter, but you can interact also then with an individual location, which I found to be kind of interesting too. There's voice, there's video, there's certainly text, and that's the main thing that I've seen there before. There's a couple other fun features that I was imagining, gosh, how would this actually work? So one is called Shake. So if you are holding your device and you shake it, and I know the Google interpretation of that is like you're really frustrated with something that's going on.
Yeah, it's usually a bug report. There's a bug report Shake application that you can compile into a lot of your code on various different platforms. I know in my prior role dealing with mobile inside of IBM, we were actually looking at a couple of different things that did that same thing, right? Unlike, you know, the traditional iOS Shake, which is undo.
Well, right. And so Shake in this particular case is to allow you to connect with others who are shaking their phone at the exact same time.
Okay. So you can all do the Harlem Shake together.
Well, yeah, you can. And when you shake it, you find other people who are shaking their phone at the same time, and then you can connect with them and say, hey.
Want to shake?
I don't know exactly. It just seemed kind of funny. There's another couple of features that look interesting, too, and I'm not prepared to chat about them because I haven't played with them more. There's one called Look Around, which I think is the radar thing of, you know, who are my friends that are nearby to me. There's one called Drift Bottle, which is something like throwing a text message into a bottle and just throwing it into the ocean and seeing who picks it up.
Oh, that's cool.
Which seems kind of neat, too. So I will have to play with this just a little bit because I've got colleagues around the world who are using this on a very regular basis. And we were trying to use it also to do our meetup for dinner. And it was very useful because it let people know where we were and what was going on. And if they wanted to join us, they could. So
really, really cool WeChat idea. I'm looking at their developer page right now because I was wondering what level of encryption they support across the various different platforms. And, you know, given the fun and exciting that happened a while back with the heartbeat problem, a.k.a. Heartbleed. Right. Yes. Heartbeat is the technology. Heartbleed was the name that people used for the problem that it was having. Yes. And, you know, really trying to wonder, when you start going across platforms, you want to look for an open standard way of encrypting the messages so that that they're appropriately packaged and distributed and you get to the right people at the right time, the right message, and it can't be interfered with in between. So it would be interesting. I'm poking around and I'm not seeing any type of encryption specifically called out. So that's obviously something that that people may want to be aware of when they start looking into these types of technologies, because I mean, there's a lot of things that you want to make sure that you're using each platform for the appropriate communication. So you probably wouldn't want to use outside of your enterprise communications for stuff that you that are not known on their encryption level.
Yeah, a good point. I mean, you do want to have a secure communication depending upon what kinds of things you're sharing. And I'm just kind of poking around here myself. There's a way to back up a chat history. Mm-hmm. They maintain it for a little while, but if you want to back it up, you can do that and then secure it with a password. But it doesn't specify exactly what kind of encryption is used with that particular password or not.
Too. Yeah, and you know, given the thought that you said you have a persistent chat, and so people can dip in and out over time, that mm-hmm. means all the chats are stored up on a server somewhere.
Right.
And then encryption becomes even more critical, at least in my mind. And maybe I'm just a little sensitive in security lately. One of the things I'm looking at in my day job is around Internet of Things messaging and communicating between devices over, you know, unsecure networks, but you want to securely communicate those. And it, very sensitive on this, and it's something that I think about. I'm actually working a project right now where we're trying to put together a sample app for people. And one of the things that we are looking at is how much security do we want to build into the sample app? Because okay. that adds complexity, And when you're just creating Hello World and you want people to see kind of how Hello World works on a new platform, you sit there and go, well, I want to make it as easy as possible. But when you start talking about things connecting to other things and connecting to people and influencing the way things are happening, you kind of want to make sure that the right thing is talking to the right thing and there's not something in between messing with it. So really looking at that, I see they do use OpenID in this, or at least they have an OpenID call. Need to understand if that's actually using the OpenID standard protocol or if they're leveraging something else. But speaking, this is really cool, and I know there's a couple of different other, you know, cross-platform chats. You know, Google Talk, right, is cross-platform.
Right.
There's I can't remember the name of it, but I saw one that's supposed to be very, very secure, where you actually have a message indicator on how secure your communication is, and there's like three levels of it, and you can have one dot, two dots, or three dots. And if you're at three dots, it's secure because that means you and that person have physically met, prior to this, and have exchanged
a key, PGP tokens. Yeah.
A physical key of some sort, right? Or a digital key of some sort in person.
Oh, neat. So you can then be assured that either side of the communication as well as the transmission layer are all secured.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So you're not sending something to someone who has an insecure environment and therefore could be an exposure for you later.
Right. You know you've actually met them, right? You know that that it wasn't a key that you just got over email, and so you kind of assume it's the right person that gave you that key. Because you traded an email beforehand saying, hey, hit me with an email that requests my private key or my public key, and I will respond with my public key so that you will know that my key is me. And if you get these messages, it's from me, yada, 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 which is kind of how PGP works. But this says, I have physically met you and we shook hands digitally with the key.
that's certainly a good trust layer. I wonder how that we could do that. I mean, there've been near field communications things. Android have this, this tap kind of structure, as well as what was the app that we played with some years ago now? Bump or something like that.
Yeah, Bump, where you would like bump each other, and that would like exchange business cards, right?
Yeah, exactly. Of course, it overwrote your like
existing business card, and yeah. So what you do is you create a bump card that's like completely bogus, saying something completely different, and you bump and I overwrite like Google.com,
which defeats that purpose. Then does it? So you were in bring into the mix here some more developer related function and some Easter eggs, I think.
Yeah.
Too.
So this is pretty funny. This past week, I saw an article on one of my feeds about the upcoming Google I/O conference. And people who've been following the podcast for a while or following me personally for a while know I also write some code on mobile. I've done a very teeny tiny 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 bit on Android. Most of it's on iOS. But I would love to go to some of the developer conferences that either Apple or Google do in this space. Unfortunately, it tends to overlap with the conference that I work on in my day job. So it's like, maybe never. But anyway, this, a couple of weeks, it was the beginning of this week, right? There was a game that was enabled to allow people to find an Easter egg in the Google I/O registration so that they can get, I guess it's a free registration and trip to go to the conference.
Yeah, I thought this was very clever to provide an opportunity for people to find these Easter eggs and then also thereby gain a free pass, the Willy Wonka golden ticket, so to speak, to the I/O conference.
Yeah, 300 of the developers who played the game got tickets. And it was kind of a space adventure, right?
Yeah.
And looking at some of the screenshots that they had in the blog post over at the Google Developers Blogspot, it kind of reminded me, and we've talked about these before, the old Infocom Text Adventures.
Yes.
Right?
Maximum Verbosity.
Absolutely. and I have those on my iPhone.
this was really clever, and it's another way of being engaging and bringing people in, and putting a puzzle out there that people have fun with, alternate reality games and games that have a purpose behind them and a tangible reward. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, it was funny because this week was also the 50th anniversary of the Basic programming language. Friend of the show, former co-host Andy Piper had posted a thing on Facebook about it, and I responded to his link on the 50th anniversary that the first three games I wrote were in BASIC. The very first program I wrote of any meaningful thing was on a Timex Sinclair 2000, which was a BASIC game that I wrote on there. Then I wrote a very simple game on a TI-99/4A in BASIC. And then the final kind of meaningful game, which kind of was an Infocom knockoff, was on an old IBM AT. All three of those games written in BASIC.
That's great. You know, when I think about it, Michael, the games that I did in the beginning were also in BASIC. And my very first program was also in BASIC too, and I'm just typing it into the chat here so that you could see what my game was, or not my game, but my version of Hello World.
hey, wait a minute! I think you got a typo in there. That should be 27 stars, not 26.
Yeah,
I think everybody's first program was probably something like this.
And I tell you, there's nothing more fun than programming on a podcast.
And we will put that very detailed application code into the show notes so that you too can write this program. Actually, what you really should do is take this program and rewrite it in every language that you know, and post those as comments to this week's show.
Yeah, you'll have to do it in C++, and get some variables and whatnot in there too. at the risk of going down memory lane, which we do when we do this kind of stuff every once in a while, the TRS-80 color computer that I had, I actually wound up programming its entire memory, and I can't remember now right offhand how much it had, but it wasn't a lot. And I did that for a Halloween party that my parents had thrown, and I'd set it up so that it had a little adventure game in it, and you had to do something to find Dracula in his castle. And I also set it up so that it would randomly, or at random intervals, would launch the cassette player and play about 10 to 15 seconds of the cassette player, which I had put in there an audio cassette, actual real audio, because I'd
like
loaded the program.
Spooky audio sounds?
Spooky stuff, screaming and boom. Yeah, exactly. Which kind of freaked people out a bit. They were not expecting that kind of stuff. And this was, I don't know when the heck it was, probably 1985 or 86 or something like that. So fun stuff. Memory lane.
Yes. I'm trying to get the various different. I think that's the correct C++ version of the program.
C out.
Yes, I remember C in and C out, but I do mostly Objective C now, right? but it's just like, oh, so much fun. Which would be here's Objective C version of it, which would be NS log. anyway, so we'll stop programming on a podcast.
Watch me type.
Well, yeah, look at him go. but speaking of watch me type and not typing at all, you have found a new iOS trailer game trailer that just came out this week that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, well, you know, considering that many of our listeners might hear this podcast on May the 4th.
Yes, May the 4th.
Or even a little bit later.
No, everybody comes in exactly on May the 4th just because we're consistent in our posting.
Yes. So happy May the 4th. Yes. If you're listening on the day
of. May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you, too. I saw that the iOS version of Star Wars, The Complete Saga, is on sale in the App Store. And you can download it for free, apparently, as you could already for a long time. But then you can buy the whole game for like $4.99. So you have all six episodes on your iOS device for like $5.
For Lego Star Wars.
Which I think is pretty darn good.
Yeah, I can't remember how much I paid for it on my Wii years and years ago, but it was probably like $30 or $40.
No, at least that much. And I wonder how the lightsabers would work on the iOS platform. I'm sure it's kind of a swipe movement.
They probably go like
vroom, vroom. No, I know, but the Wii remote just gives you so much of a great, you know, lightsaber experience that using your finger, you know, on the iOS device works like it worked for me on the Lord of the Rings Lego.
Yeah, I got tired of that.
Yeah, well, I may download it. What the heck, you know? I've been playing Family Guy recently too. I don't know if you came across
Family
that.
Family Guy.
Yeah, they're the same. I don't think it's the same outfit, but you know, they're both Fox television properties, The Simpsons and Family Guy. There is a Family Guy game where you have quests to save Quahog, and you're doing very similar kinds of things where the whole town had been wrecked because Peter and the giant chicken had this epic battle. And there you're rebuilding it, you know, bit by bit. And as you rebuild it, you unlock characters and do various things. So I've been playing that a little bit, too, to kind of get a sense of what it feels like and how it works. And it's got some pros to the way that The Simpsons work in the sense that it's zippy quick to load and you're in there and you're playing right away. And the way that you assign tasks to characters is kind of novel. You drag an idea into their head and then they go and do that thing. So that's kind of
cool.
Fun.
No, I hadn't seen that one yet. And I'm sure it's a freemium model.
It is the exact same model as you work with Simpsons and everything else. In this game, the paymium currency are clams. So you get golden clams that you can use to speed things up.
I got
up.
A golden clam.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a golden ticket, but it's a clam.
It is kind of like a clam. And I would say that on the racy meter, it is certainly more racy than The Simpsons. The humor is there. It's Family Guy humor. But it is certainly
giggity.
Yeah. it's stuff that when I was playing it and then my 10-year-old would come by and say, "Hey, Dad, what you got there?" I'd be like, "I'm switching to another app. That's what I'm doing."
Remember the four-finger pinch or five-finger pinch.
Yeah. I've got one other one that I thought I'd share here with you and others. And I'm kind of bumming because I had to restart again. But you know me and my penchant for, you know, 8-bit kind of games.
8-bit.
Right? So
I want you to move up to 9-bit, please. I mean, just you need that parody bit.
Maybe. I mean, maybe this is more 16-bit. It certainly feels like it's got more colors. So this other game I've been playing is called Disco Zoo. And it's a cute little puzzle game where you collect animals. You rescue animals to put them in the zoo, which seems like a really strange thing that you go out in the wild and rescue animals so that they go into the zoo.
Yes.
And you wake up the animals so that they are.
Do you wake them up
around
to Donna Summers?
No, but they don't have like Disco Inferno either, which kind of
burn, baby, burn.
But you wake up the animals, and when they're awake, then they generate coins, and the coins are used to pay for your rescue missions to go and rescue more animals, and you kind of level yourself up to a point where you've rescued like 25 of a particular animal, and then after that, any animal that you rescue that's beyond 25, you're setting them free, which seems kind of very circular in the end,
yeah.
Right? Rescuing an animal to set them free. But maybe they are in an endangered spot.
If you love somebody, set them free.
So it's a cute game, and the disco part comes in where if you start a disco at the zoo, which requires usually the paymium currency, then all the animals dance and they earn double the amount of coins. And if they were asleep, they wake up.
Do they wake up and dance, or just wake up and you got to make them dance?
They wake up and dance.
Uh-huh.
So it is pretty cute. You know, you got unicorns and cows and tigers and bears. Oh my. So it is kind of fun. And the way you rescue them is you've got a certain number of, it's kind of like Battleship. You've got a certain number of tiles you can uncover. And if you uncover the right ones in the right space and the right on the chart, then you rescue that animal. And if you don't, you either need to spend disco bucks to get some more tries, or if you're connected to a network, you might be able to get some free tries by watching some advertising.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, this is kind of a cute game, and they've done a really nice job also of allowing, not that I've done this with my kids, but you can set it up so that you could let your kids play the game, but prevent them from spending disco bucks or buying additional disco bucks by setting on a parental control within the game.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of a way of saying, you know, I can hand my game to my kid without fear that they're going to go and rack up a lot of charges on my account or spend my hard fought, earned, found, you know, premium currency.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think what new games I've played lately. The one that I'm so afraid to download and start playing is, a couple of years ago we had our Skyrim fix.
Oh yeah.
Which we love, dragons, and Skyrim was just an awesome open world adventure, and I mean I still have it on my one gaming rig and I do interesting things with it. Well, they've just released I want to say about a week ago The Elder Scrolls Online. Which The Elder Scrolls is kind of the super universe that Skyrim was within.
Ooh.
And I can just imagine, you know, a Skyrim-based MMO that would just be all-consuming and destroy what little left time I have left in my days. on the iDevices, nothing really new. I haven't had time to really play anything new lately. It's been all work and no play. I have played a new game.
Oh,
I have okay, played good. A new
Which
game.
One?
It's on Google Glass, and it's really good and fun for about 30 to 45 seconds.
Sounds like the perfect game.
Yeah, so the Google Glass team has made available a little gaming set of apps. Just really, again, it's to showcase for developers to understand the APIs, to understand the UI and the UX, the user experience for developing games on Glass. And there is a kind of like a skeet shoot game where mm-hmm. where you say pull and a little thing comes out, and then you say bang and it tries to shoot it. And so the idea is it's doing head tracking.
Right.
And then you're trying to track as the ball falls down the screen, and hopefully you shoot it. They have another game. That one's good 35, 45 seconds worth of fun. the next game that I've played, I haven't played all the games. The next game that I played was Balance, which basically is you have your little head at the bottom of the screen, and blocks fall on your head, and you try to keep them balanced. And then eventually there's too many blocks and you lose balance and the game's over. And that one was fun for a good 10 to 15 seconds. But the interesting thing is really understanding the sensors, understanding the, like I said, kind of the user experience of how to engage people on that. There are some third-party apps on the Glass App Store that people are doing. Like if you're a golfer, using Google Glass and the AR overlay to get information about the course and how you mm-hmm. might want to hit it. hit the ball. So, I mean, there's some really interesting changes going on in UI design as it relates to having that AR overlay on your vision.
Well, you know, Michael, I would expect that as we go forward, it will not be just a sole glass type of game. It'll be a combination game.
Yes.
Right? It'll be your device, like your phone, and glass at the same time. So there might be something that you do on your phone that will then you need to take another step with your glass. So, you know, it might be your scavenger hunt kind of things. You might be given some challenges to go find something similar. And then you've got to look around you and find the Where's Waldo or the hidden object or whatever it is in the area around you.
Oh, yeah. Think about all the games that we talked about years ago about, you know, like pattern matching or doing things with images, and definitely extend that into the real world where you're trying to improve the vision algorithm, right? So you're sitting there saying, I have a book. Scan with the glass. Oh, there's a book, because books are lots of different shapes, sizes, and colors and textures, right? What is a car? Scan. What is a Ford? What is a Ford pickup truck? You know, you could really see kind of a gaming element of that that also improves the algorithm in a contextual computer.
Well, absolutely. And you could do the same thing with maps too, right? You know, if you're walking around, think about Street View. You know, you might be able to update and populate Street View because you're wearing glass and you're given a small challenge for a few points or whatever to go determine whether the street sign is, you know, still there or different, or, you know, if the house number is correct, and you just find it by looking at it. You know, the user interface on glass could just make that segment glow for just a moment, captures a picture of it, boom, 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 you're done.
Bada bing.
And you score some points.
Excellent. Woo-hoo. It's ways with glass.
It could be
gobbling up the world.
It's the last yard. You know, not the last mile, but it could be the last yard kind of stuff. Especially when you think about walking into a building, right? You know, there's an awful lot of I'm now in a building and I couldn't drive a car around to map out where I was. So you combine that ability with glass. Click it in with some iBeacon capability, and now you got something even more fun. You know, play your chase games that way. Shake your phone to find a WeChat friend that then you have to go figure out who they are.
And now we have completed the circle. We are back.
Yeah,
excellent. Well, we really value your feedback on gamesatwork.biz, and we look forward to seeing your code examples in the comments.
That'll be fun.
That will be fun. We know there's a lot of developers who listen to this show, and we value your feedback on ideas for future shows, future guests, et cetera, and we hope everybody's having a wonderful May the 4th or any time after that when you listen to this show.
Could be May the 4th next year.
Yeah, if you just downloaded it in 2015.
Yes.
Because what's on the net stays on the net. Well, thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of your day or whatever time you are listening to the show.
See ya. Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.